Blog Talk Radio.
¿Cómo son?
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around,
and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
All right.
There we
okay.
go. There's Ron.
Yeah.
Ron.
I was playing golf today, and there was a couple singles that were there, and so we all joined up. There's three of us, and one guy is from Alaska. And he's down here. He said he just wanted to play some golf. And so he came down for a month to play golf in Florida. And another guy is from Rhode Island. And he came down to visit his parents. And he works for UPS up there in Rhode Island. He said he'll be busy for the next 3 months. So he came down. Yeah. But I gave them both a business card, an All About Wine business card. And I said, tune in. So if you guys are listening, hi, and welcome to the show. And anyone else out there that's new, welcome to the show. Yeah. Okay, we have a guest tonight. Bronson Kistier, I think it is. I think that's how it's pronounced. Well, before I bring him, he's hearing me, so he can do that. Before I bring him on, let me tell you how I found him. He was at a wine tasting, and my sister and brother-in-law went to the wine tasting, and they met him, and they tasted his entry into, or his contribution, I don't know, what do you call it, but into the show, and they loved it, and they got his business card, and they sent it to me and said, here, you really need to contact him. It's really not fermented wine, but it's really great, and it's something that is fantastic, and your listeners need to know about it. So I contacted him, and, well, the rest is history. He's on the show. So let me bring him onto the show. And welcome, Bronson. Thank you for taking the time out to join us tonight.
Of course, Ron. Happy to talk with you.
Yeah, that's but you heard my story, how you came about under my radar. My sister and brother-in-law originally
I think they were at a tasting I was doing. I believe it was at a Total Wine and More.
Was it?
Okay. I think I was set up doing I just had my table set up with my wares, and I was just tasting people on it, and they mentioned you, and I shared my card, and that's how we connected.
So great. Okay, first, before we get into what you actually make, I want to know about you. Where did you grow up? What's your education? You're a bartender? You all that stuff.
Cool. I'll give you a quick rundown. I'm born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri. Which is where I still live. I did get a degree in English from the University of Missouri, Kansas City, with an emphasis in creative writing. At the time, I was pursuing some writing endeavors that led me into – I was also a musician. I ended up getting plugged into the Kansas City music scene and started playing in a lot of different bands over the years, both original outfits and a lot of tribute bands as well, just things for fun. And that led me, there was a band I was in that was becoming more of a committed gig, and we were getting dates kind of across the country. And so I decided to get into a line of work that would allow me to punch in, punch out, and take time off. And so that got me into the restaurant industry. I started as a back waiter at a place called P.F. Chang's, a corporate Chinese chain, and then worked my way up from there. Eventually shifted over to a place called, at the time it was called JP Wine Bar. It's a wine bar with an extensive reserve list here in KC. They're still standing under the name of Tannen Wine Bar at this time. But that's where I really started learning a lot about wine. I mean, at the time I started there, that would have been probably 2008-ish. I didn't know, I didn't even know what a Malbec was. So I started my wine training there with their wine director, Guy Barry Tunnel, who's still running the program, and the guy knows more about wine than anybody I know personally. Started bartending there, learning about wine and serving wine, obviously. But there was also a pretty intensive craft cocktail program that the head bartender was running. He kind of took me under his wing. He's still a buddy of mine. His name's Jared Finn. He kind of showed me the ropes, introduced me to some of these books that were written by kind of who we call maybe the four horsemen of the cocktail renaissance.
Oh.
People like Dale DeGroff and Dave Wondrich, Gary Regan, and the like. And so I kind of took pretty swiftly to the craft of cocktail making and started my pursuit doing that there. And then I bounced from there to another bar. After I was at Tannen for about a year, I went to another bar where I headed up the cocktail program, and then ended up switching to another place where I was the bar manager and beverage director for about 9 years. And that's where I kind of, you know, worked to build a really cool bar culture. It was a little French bistro called Westport Cafe, with a 10-seat cocktail bar. And while I continued to work on more and more intensive cocktail menus there, that's where I stumbled across the 300-year-old technique of clarified milk punch, which is what I make now in bottles. And we can get more into that as we talk about what it is I do now.
Okay, very good. So, all these restaurants and everything, they're in Kansas City?
That's correct.
Okay. And you sort of apologize for bouncing around, but one thing I've noticed about the industry of restaurants and bartending and stuff like that, people do bounce around. People go to different jobs all the time. It's part of the culture.
True.
Yeah. Go on.
It is true. It's part and parcel, or, you know, it's part of the course in the industry.
It is.
And it's for a number of reasons, you know, that people feel either, you know, motivated to find a new opportunity at a new
or
spot.
Or not appreciated.
For that. Yeah, it's just it's a myriad of reasons. And it is difficult to find. It's difficult to find a place where you are happy and feel that you're well treated, given where you have the right balance of the freedom that you want as an employee and the long leash, so to speak, granted from the owners of the bar. And you can find a good relationship with someone who's running an operation, who's running an establishment, then it's worth hanging on to. So. That's kind of where
why you were there for 9 years. Yeah,
exactly. And I actually was there when I started there. The original partners that opened it I started there in 2000, at the very beginning of 2011. And then in 2015 to 16, there was this transitionary period where the two original owners who were from Kansas and Missouri sold it to a few gentlemen who moved over here from Lyon in France. And,
oh, wow.
They took over the bar. They bought it. So they've been there for just going on 8 years now. So kind of it's not a brag or anything. It's just I ended up being there for so long that my tenure there was longer than either of the pairs of owners or anyone else that's worked there, which is just kind of funny, I guess. But
and do they appreciate your knowledge and your job you're doing, the new owners and all that? Obviously,
absolutely.
So, you know, good. Because that's important.
I didn't know how it was going to go over. I had really planted down there and worked hard at building a very hospitable culture at the bar, developing a lot of regulars. It was a big industry spot for people that got off work. We served food late. So we had a strong industry following there also. So in that transition, with the guys coming from France, I didn't really know what to expect, but I mean, long story short, when I met them, we all got along great. They liked what I was doing, and they just let me keep doing what I was doing, and actually had a good time kind of teaching them a little bit about how to make cocktails and, you know, my style of bartending. And it was, you know, just ended up being a really great relationship, and we're all still pals, the French guys and the original owners. So
it was
a good spot to be for that long.
Yeah, you can't put a price on that. That's, you know, it's really something that if you can find something that works well for you in that business, then it's fantastic. It just can help
it really
but grow in both aspects, theirs and yours. So you discovered a recipe. And you decided that you would pursue this recipe. Tell us about that.
Okay. And as I answer questions, I'll try to keep it the Cliff Notes versions here. But
go right ahead. We've got plenty of time.
Excuse me. Okay, cool. Well, so I'm a cocktail nerd, and over the years, I just got deeper and deeper into it. And I was working on a cocktail menu. I would switch it up twice a year for fall, winter, and spring, summer. Mm-hmm. And then I had a set cocktail menu, but I loved making bespoke cocktails for people. We had a lot of people I not only knew by name, but I knew what kind of flavors they liked. You know, and a lot of times people would just come in and ask me to make something. And a lot of times bartenders maybe don't like to do that, but I kind of enjoyed going off the cuff and just kind of making, bespoke drinks based on the people that I knew there and knowing what they liked and so on and so forth. But I did change the printed menu twice a year, and when I was working on the fall-winter menu in 2016, I came across reading around, I read in this book, it was mentioned by, in a book called Punch by cocktail historian David Wondrich, there was this mention of something called clarified milk punch, which was a technique where, and this is going to sound weird, but, you know, walk with me, it's pretty cool what the outcome is. But it's the technique of creating a batch cocktail, for lack of a better term, or a punch, with fresh ingredients, including fresh citrus, spices, sugar, spirits, and then taking that cloudy mixture and filtering it through milk proteins, natural milk proteins, filtering it through whole milk, basically. And that process, paradoxically, would result in a completely clear, very velvety and very bewildering libation that really has to kind of be drunk to be fully appreciated. but it's whether and there are recipes. The historical recipes go back as far as the early 1700s. The original, well, the first agreed upon, or the first, let's say, recognized printing of a recipe was in 1711 by a woman named Mary Rocket, who would take brandy and infuse it with lemon zest and add lemon juice and sugar and nutmeg and then clarify that mixture through milk, resulting in what basically looks like a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc, just as clear with that straw color. And then that could be actually aged over years, much like a wine. And through the 1700s, this style of drink, known as clarified milk punch, or just colloquially as milk punch, became super popular. And Benjamin Franklin committed his recipe to a piece of paper in his own writing that was sent to a political colleague in 1762. Charles Dickens was a huge fan of the drink, would make his own versions. And some of these bottles were actually discovered of Charles Dickens's punch were discovered in his wine cellar years after he had passed, that were basically covered in dust, but that punch was still perfectly delicious. So it's like historically was also a natural way of preserving fresh ingredients for a long period of time. So I thought you were going to ask a question there.
Well, okay. Now my question is, you say I'm trying to picture how you're filtering this through milk proteins. I can't wrap my head around it.
It's pretty bizarre, but I'll try to create a visual for you. So basically, we'll just say, excuse me, sorry, my cat is trying to get in here.
I locked mine out.
Yeah, I did too, but he's got his paw under the door here. this brandy punch, for example, that Mary Rocket had. So she would mix the brandy, the lemon zest, the lemon juice, the sugar, the nutmeg. She'd mix that all together. And then basically there are different ways that you can proceed at that point. But basically just imagine this cloudy mixture. You add basically whole milk would be added to that cloudy mixture. This is the weird part. This is the part that sounds a little off-putting, but basically what happens is the acidity from all of the fresh lemon juice that's in that punch, it breaks the milk instantly into thousands or millions of these tiny little milk solids. It's exactly the same technique, basically just modified, of making like ricotta, where you use citrus to break your proteins from your whey, and then you've got like these big cheesy curds. It's the same concept, except the volume of punch that you're pouring this milk into is so large that once the milk breaks, it doesn't like coagulate into these chunks. It really just looks like millions of these little snowflakes that are just flurrying around inside of your punch. So at that point, you take that mixture, and then you would through cheesecloth. And as those milk solids precipitate down and collect on the inside of that cheesecloth, they form like a more and more thickening nest. And as that layer gets built up, you continue to pass the punch through it. The cheesecloth is there simply to hold the milk proteins in place, so those milk solids. That layer of solids becomes the actual layer of filtration. There's a molecule called casein, which is present naturally in those milk solids,
right,
that forms like a molecular lattice that is so fine that It will sponge out all of the particulates that make the juice cloudy. It'll even strip the coloration out of a brown spirit while still retaining the aged flavor qualities of that spirit. It takes a long time to do it. To clarify, just for reference, I would make my version of this technique at Westport Cafe about once a week. I'd make 6 gallons at a time, and it would take about 48 hours to clarify an entire batch. So
wow,
it does take a while. But again, yeah, once that filtration is done, you kind of watch as it filters through these milk solids. It'll be cloudy at first, and then as that filtration layer builds up, it'll run clearer and clearer, and eventually it does run through. I mean, it's as clear as water, with like a straw hue to it.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a pretty,
so
it's a pretty cool technique.
Yeah. So it's not, well, I suppose I was going to say it's not something that you would make big batches of, but I suppose you could.
Well, that's where the crux of this whole story comes in, is making it and making these punches in small batches is very tedious. It's very fickle. I mean, even running countless batches of our clarified milk punch at the cafe, doing everything exactly the same every single time, depending on who knows, climactic elements, pH fluctuations in the citrus, you know, variables to add infinitum. It would sometimes come out a little differently each time. So, but I kind of jumping ahead, we can kind of talk about how I got to this point. But at this point, I do have a fully licensed facility and distillery where I do all my production, and I make batches of clarified milk punch and 500 gallon batches.
Oh.
Then I bottle those and put them out into the market for retail. And that is what did you say it was your brother-in-law?
My brother-in-law and sister, yes.
Cool. Yes. That's what they tasted when I was at when I was doing that tasting.
Okay. Now,
so,
you say the variables, how do you keep from making each batch different? I mean, if I were to go out and buy a bottle and say, ooh, this is great, this is wonderful, I want some more of this, and then I get the next one, I'm going, ooh, what'd he do? Will that happen?
There will be minor fluctuations, yes, from bottle to bottle. It's very, very minute. We do taste testing after we finish each batch, and it is so minuscule from that. We do corrections to make sure that we're trying to get a consistency of flavor in the recipe, but it is a completely natural product. I don't use any artificial flavorings. I don't use anything fake. It's all fresh juice. There's a little added pure cane sugar. But the short answer to your question is there are very minute fluctuations, but really the bigger change comes in how long the product has been in the bottle.
Oh, really?
Over time, it will deepen in flavor, and new flavors will kind of it'll just kind of deepen and get a little bit richer over time. I've got bottles of punch that are about 5 years old right now, that are still delicious and just have like this deeper, richer kind of flavor. Yes, there are minor fluctuations from batch to batch, but a lot of that difference comes in the longer you, once you get a bottle, the longer you hang on to it, the more it will change in the bottle very slowly over time.
Do you do? making wine, we have labs and we do tests, you know, with the wines and just to be sure things are where they're supposed to be and all that. Do you test these when you're done to check and be sure everything, or is it just a taste test?
We have a number of little different tests, like we do our pH content, our Brix content, our ethanol content. Every batch I have to proof, but we replicate every single time. We replicate the exact process, and what we did at first, and eventually I'll tell you kind of what actually goes into these. I've got two of these recipes that we make, but what we did when I started getting closer and closer to figuring out all my regulations, I went and did some studies with FDA food labs, and because this historically was a preservation method, this is the first completely naturally made, you know, using like whole milk and fresh unpasteurized juice and really nothing that wasn't available 300 years ago, at least in theory.
Yeah.
I mean, certain fruits were harder to get, but these are all just, you know, these are ingredients that have been around for centuries. So to take those ingredients, combine them, and then use milk as a filter, I wanted to make sure that we weren't going to do anything that wasn't safe. And so we went through extensive studies with the FDA to prove the efficacy of the preservation method and passed every test that they threw at it, well above the bare minimum requirements on, pathogen control and long-term stability. So, and we get regular visits from the FDA just to check in on things. Typically, they don't step in on spirits or, in booze production, the FDA doesn't stand in as much, but as we are like processing fresh juice and using dairy as a clarifier, they have,
steps into it. Your milk, where do you get your milk?
There's a company called Belfonte, which is a locally sourced, or a local company that sources their milk from farms in the region.
Okay. I'm just wondering, you don't go down to the local Hy-Vee and buy yourself a couple of gallons of milk. You actually.
we source it in bulk for cost effective purposes. But it's the same milk that you would get off of a shelf in a retail store. There's nothing.
Oh yeah. Except that yours doesn't have any of the added vitamin D and all that other stuff that they do to milk.
Yeah, this is just pure. Yeah. Your whole milk.
Your cow milk, yeah.
That's right.
So your fruits now, come winter, Kansas City isn't noted for growing fresh fruits in the winter.
That's correct.
What do you do with that about when that happens? So you need a new batch. And it's cold there now, so you're not getting any fruit.
It is cold. It's dropping. We get our apples in the form of apple cider, or that's the one ingredient we use. That it's fresh apple juice that's very lightly pasteurized and will keep throughout the wintertime. We get that from a local company called Lewisburg Cider Mill. They're in Lewisburg, Kansas. And that helps us maintain consistency in our product. And all of our, when we started out, we were doing a lot of fresh squeezing of our citrus. We've found bulk purveyors that can provide from various vendors who sell various types of fresh squeezed aseptically produced juice that you can get in bulk. In sealed containers, that is, getting in the bowl kind of helps with maintaining that quality from one batch to another. And but as we like our this kind of gets into the recipe, but we use pineapple juice and the tropical punch, and that comes in 200 gallon drums that then it tastes like it comes right out of a pineapple. We get we get ginger fresh frozen in 80 pound blocks fresh ginger juice that tastes like it came straight out of, like you just snapped open a piece of ginger. It's pretty remarkable. So the way the supply chain works today, sourcing juice from processors that have the equipment to supply in bulk, and either through freezing or aseptic production can preserve fresh juice for long periods. That's what we use in our batches now.
Mm. Okay. You mentioned that you have two. Actually, I'm on your website, and I know you have two. You have two punches. You have the tropical, and you have the your original punch. Are you looking at expanding and doing other types of punches?
Yes. Yeah, we'll release another one in the springtime. The idea is to get three core products that are all very different. The original and tropical are both very, very different from each other. Even though they look almost identical as far as how the juice looks in the bottle. Mm-hmm. But they're entirely different. And then the third one that we're working on, which is TBD, will also be massively different. And we'll have those three core products and then possibly look at doing some collaborations with other local companies, as well as just some limited release recipes as well.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Once you open a bottle of this, it looks like there's bar tops on these. That's what you're using?
Yep. Those are synthetic bar top corks.
Bar top, yeah. Once you open a bottle and you drink half of it and you stick the thing back in the refrigerator, does it go bad? I mean, should you drink it soon after it's opened, or will the shelf life after it's open be good for a long time?
After it's open, it is good for a long time.
Is it? Wow.
I recommend people finishing it within 6 months.
Wow.
It won't hurt you, but it does, as the air gets in the bottle, it starts kind of muting some of those flavors. In the bottle, we'll see how it progresses over time, but I've got bottles that are 5 years old that are still really good right now. But yeah, once the bottle's open, you actually don't even need to put it in the fridge. You can set it right back on your bar cart. I actually even recommend that people not refrigerate it, because the idea with these is to kind of getting at the core essence of what I'm doing. These are ready to drink cocktails. So they're meant to just be poured straight from the bottle over ice and then garnished. And I prefer to have these bottles out at ambient temperature so that when you pour it over ice, you get the proper amount of dilution. But that doesn't mean that if you want something super cold out of the fridge that I'm going to stand in your way. There's plenty of people that do that, and that's perfectly fine. But it doesn't require refrigeration even after it's been opened.
It's like wine, you know, I mean, white wine, a lot of people over-refrigerate it and make it so cold that you've lost a lot of little subtle things about it. And then as it warms up, you start picking up. And it sounds like that's exactly what's happening with this. If you start refrigerating it, it just mutes a lot of the flavors and stuff.
Yeah.
You said you use a spirit. Mm-hmm. What spirit and what percentage is going into these things?
So I'll use that as an opportunity to tell you. I use two different spirits, one for each of the recipes, actually three. So just to give you a snapshot to those listening, the original recipe is a base of aged bourbon. It's a 4-year bourbon
Oh, wow.
That we mix we take that bourbon and we mix in fresh juice from Honeycrisp apples, ginger, and lemons. And then we do big brew bags full of cinnamon, clove, allspice, and star anise. A little bit of cane sugar to balance that acidity, and then we filter it through milk. So that one's bourbon with like apple, ginger, spice kind of vibes, super popular during this time of year. And then, and that was the one that I developed at Westport Cafe. Started making that in those 6 gallon batches. It got so incredibly popular, people started asking for bottles of it to buy and take home. And that's what snowballed into me starting the company, hence the name Original Punch on that label. And then the other one, the Tropical Punch, I use a neutral rum from the Virgin Islands. And then I use a high ester Jamaican pot still rum, and I blend those together to do the base. And then we add in fresh juice from pineapples and limes and oranges with a tropical kind of tiki spice blend and some tropical herbs as well.
Wow. So you've got quite a dick going into these things. I mean, it's just not something that you walk into your kitchen and you grab these ingredients out of the cabinet. These things aren't readily available. You're actually putting together a real, well, your tropical punch is really quite elaborate, it seems.
It is. Yeah. And the tropical is a little bit more, has more ingredients in it. It has a bit more of a kind of a wild layered profile. The original punch is definitely a little bit more of our favorite, or the more popular skew that we have, with just like that really nice spiced, deeply spiced apple ginger with some nice acidities from the lemons and bourbon. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's an elaborate process. And just speaking on that, there are, this concept of clarified milk punch has gotten to be like basically the hottest new trend. Well, it's not so much of a new trend anymore, but it's still a very, very popular trend in craft cocktail bartending. There are bartenders, I mean, literally thousands, tens of thousands probably, of bartenders across the world who are in the, you know, kind of your high-end craft cocktail scene that are making their own clarified milk punches. There are countless recipes for clarified milk punch that have been drummed up.
I'm shaking my head. A milk punch, who would, wow. Okay,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's very counterintuitive. No, you're good. And there is, just as a side note, there is another milk punch that's a New Orleans-style milk punch, and that's a classic drink as well. And that one is just known as milk punch. There's no clarified in front of it. That one was a New Orleans invention. Clarified milk punch predates this one that I'm talking about, but a milk punch, New Orleans style, is milk, brandy, sugar, and some nutmeg and some other ingredients in there. It's actually a milky, looks like Bailey's or something. But
you shake it up and pour it down your throat. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's right down the gullet. but the clarified milk punch is one that is clear and is given this, again, you get all the ingredients that go into it are preserved, so you get all this fresh fruit flavor. You get nice acidity from whatever citrus you're using, spices, and locks and preserves all that stuff. Running it through those proteins smooths everything out. It binds all those flavors together, and it gives you this very bewilderingly like velvety texture that you just don't really get it from anything else. And it's hard to describe, but I've watched people try it for the first time, and it's just very fun to watch people's brains try to wrap their head around what's going on, because it's just such a surprising experience.
Oh, I can make milk. Milk.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Milk. This is filtered through milk. What do you do with all of your unfiltered stuff, all of the stuff that's caught in the cheesecloth? I mean,
currently, Currently, that is a lost product for us. We haven't. We've got a. We're also self-funded and spent a lot of money on lab, you know, all the lab testing we've got to do for our main product. So to find a use for that, what is left over, it tastes delicious. It tastes like the ice cream version of what's in the bottle.
All right.
It has all the flavors. It's a little bit more bitter because a lot of those compounds that were filtered out are compressed into those proteins. So it has a little bit more the slight bitterness, but I mean, to spin that into like a frozen drink machine, it'd pour like a pina colada. It's another product that we'd have to get tested for safety, and we're not there yet. We're just trying to keep up with the production on the clear stuff that's going in the bottles and that.
You say that the original actually is a better seller right now than the tropical?
Yeah, I mean, especially during this time of year, it's really a home run with the flavors. It's, you know, you get bourbon, you get spiced apple, ginger, you know, cinnamon and clove. It's great over ice. I pour it over ice with an orange peel. That's how I served the exact recipe at Westport Cafe. Made it like 6 gallons at a time, and it made it super easy on a busy night. I didn't have to shake or stir anything. Just poured it over ice, put an orange peel on it. We sold it like crazy. But we also we'd also get requests for it to be served hot. So I started.
I was going to say, can it be served warm? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It can. And on those requests, I would just poke my head into the back of house, and if there was an open burner, I'd ask chef for permission to come aboard to use the burner for about 30 seconds or a minute to heat some stuff up, and I'd bring it back out.
Huh. So,
it drinks really well and just warmed slow over the stove and put into a mug. You can drink it right by the fire.
If you get it over the stove, is it going to bring out all those aromas, fill the air with all these different citrus and everything else that you have in there, cinnamons and all that?
Yes. It'll kind of open that stuff up. And I, you know, just heat it slow, keep it covered. And then, you know, when you've got it lightly steaming, pour it in a mug. And, yeah, those flavors, those aromas just jump right out of your mug.
No, I can imagine. I can imagine they do. Mike, you have any questions for Ronson here?
Let me check on social media. I don't have anything here, and looks clear so far. Yeah.
Okay.
Nope, just enjoying it. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So let's get down to the bottom line. A bottle of the original and a bottle of the tropical. How much?
They are on our website. We do ship direct to 38 states, Florida being one of them. They're,
we get shipped down here for everything. I mean, Florida's pretty open about that.
yes, they are. From our website, the bottles are $28 a piece.
Okay. Okay.
And just kind of put that in perspective. I mean, they're completely, you know, they're naturally made, crafted drinks by a bartender. I would pour these over ice with an orange peel. Our cocktails at Westport Cafe were $12 or $13.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, all the cocktails it's like going into a high-end cocktail bar. The drinks, you know, bartenders are putting a lot of work and prep into these drinks. So, yeah, we would pour at the cafe. We'd pour at the time. It was $12. I think they sell it for $13 or $14 now. So one single pour sitting in the bar costs you about $13. One of these bottles has about 5 pours in it. And, again, it's the exact same recipe I was using. So this is something – that can, you know, it's all ready to go. Just pour it on ice. You can put it back on your shelf, bring it back out when you want another drink, And yeah, so on the site, 28 per bottle. The shipping breaks down to $20 for every 12 bottles that are ordered.
Do you have a case discount or anything like that?
We don't have a case discount right now. We are working through a third-party e-commerce company that's going to help us get all this stuff up and running. So we would need to sort that out. But this is just something that happened recently. That's something that we've discussed doing. But the right now, the as far as the spreading money over a large order would be, you know, one bottle, $28, but the shipping is $20. So that's, you're looking at a $48 bottle. But you buy, you know, 10 is a lot, but, you know, your $20 shipping gets spread out to $2 per each bottle. So,
right. Yeah.
So, but currently we're not doing case discounts, but that is something that I've got a pen in.
Okay. Well, I just wondering, you know, a lot of times, and you're just starting. It's understandable that you're not gonna be doing it. So, I was just.
But it's a good question.
Just curious. Yeah, it's something that might be curious about, you know, ordering. And if you're saying it sounds like a good winter drink, a good holiday drink. So, the you know, or even presents or something. It just fascinates me. I'm going to have to, well, what I'll do is I'll have my sister go to a local store up there and get some for me. And I plan on being up there in the spring, or I'll come out to a local store and get some, and possibly stop by, and visit you at the bar and say hi to you while I'm there.
Well, you definitely reach out. I'm not at the bar anymore. I actually left. I left the bar to pursue this, and it's kind of funny how things worked out. But I was not legally able to continue bartending with my name on a distillery as a producer.
Really?
Because of the three-tier system kind of works out that way.
Oh, my God.
So my original plan was actually to stay at the cafe while growing the company, but we had I had a distillery permit that had my name coming on it, and I had to leave bartending at the time, and I could have flown by the radar. But and then long story short, we ran into a few hang-ups with the city of Kansas City, some zoning with our location that we couldn't get worked out with them. And then I ended up moving from there and jumping into a distillery operation that a friend of mine operates. So
he has one, so you didn't have to start from scratch then.
Yeah. We did a lot of that work on our own, but again, we were fighting with the city, and it was about 8 months since we had gotten in there, and we weren't able to make a drop, so we ended up jumping out. And then, just industry pals of mine that have an operation, they took us in. We operate there in a part of the square footage that we have docked off. And I, at this point, could maybe get back into, I miss being behind the bar. Being that my name's not on this permit, it'd be easier for me to jump in somewhere. But I've been staying so busy with trying to keep the thing going.
Well, that three-tier system, I never thought of that. But, since you're distributing and manufacturing, you can't actually bartend because that's tasting room. Yeah. Oh, wow.
These laws that go back to the repeal of prohibition, basically. They don't want you operating on two tiers at the same time.
That's it. Jeez. Unbelievable. Yeah, I've talked about that and criticized that many, many times. I've had some guests on the show over the years who hate it as much as I do, and they have not been kind in their comments about the three-tier system. So
I
now,
can
but,
imagine.
You know, really, what are we going to do about it?
Right.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we'd like to do about it, and all of us that are having to deal with it. But I had a guest on from Southern Wine and Spirits, and he was very knowledgeable, and somebody like that in the business, in one of the tiers that is always good, but it's still a pain. So
it is a pain. That is for sure.
Yeah, that's surprising. You can bartend because of it. Wow. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay. that is amazing.
And I do miss it, and I at this point, the way things are set up, I could probably fairly easy get away with that. There's a chance you might catch me behind a bar sometime in the near future, because it is after doing it for so long and then not having done it over 3 years now, it's something I really do miss.
Oh wow,
So I
noticed one thing on the you ship to most all states except for just a few here, but I noticed two of the few here is Missouri and Kansas. Now that is really odd because you're there, you can't.
So to answer that real quick, that is not a law outcome. That is a decision that I made. Because we have a good distributor here. There, we got on with them about 2 months after we launched because I couldn't keep up with running my own distribution.
Oh yeah,
and
that's tough.
As a buyer, I recognize them as one of the best. Distributors, they're small guys with a really, really cool portfolio, a bunch of they're really kind of focused on natural wines with a burgeoning spirits portfolio. So we got with them, we got a good relationship with them. I've built a really good relationship with a lot of different retailers throughout the metro area and across Missouri and Kansas, and didn't want to undercut any sales that would that could go to the retail supporters that really helped us grow this brand, and that without these guys I wouldn't have made it as far as I did. So
makes sense.
I took it as a it's just a decision that I made that I didn't want to undercut those sales in these states and try to keep people going to support local retailers, but for those that lived beyond our reach, I wanted to have that option. So
yeah, well, that's a good decision.
That's the choice I made.
it works. I like the thought that you're trying to take care of the people who actually work with you and all that. That's admirable. So good. Before we go, any other comments or things you want to say about your Bronson's Original Punch and Bronson's Tropical Punch and process and all that other stuff? Anything, any other comments?
Oh, I mean, nothing other than just a kind of summation of what we talked about. I mean, again, the idea was with these products, what I'm doing is bringing a completely naturally made high-end cocktail made by a longtime bartender, put it into a bottle to be brought out to the retail shelf. This is something that can just be pulled off the shelf, poured over ice, and it's the same level of quality that you would get going into a high-end sort of, quote-unquote speakeasy-style cocktail bar, but it's poured right out of the bottle and ready to drink. And the RTD market is elevating. There's more and more things kind of showing up. And again, I don't want to say that I'm above any of these things. Like, I'll drink a Neon Peak Salsa watermelon margarita mixer. Like, I'm not above it. But but to the ready-to-drink market, I really saw an opportunity to take this historical preservation method, use it to do a high-quality cocktail made with fresh ingredients The preservation is half of the fun of it because it gives it this really unique quality. And then I just wanted to bring that experience to the RTD market. It is the only product like this that's made in this method that has ever been available in the retail market. So it's a pretty unique product.
It's amazing. It's
unique, but it also is pretty universally appreciated. I've seen people try it that drink Bud Light. I've seen people try it that prefer a shot to Nifty Pop and everyone in between, and somehow across the board it is kind of universally appreciated. So it's pretty cool stuff. Worth a try. For sure.
I can see that. Before we leave, I want you to give your web address and contact information and anything else that people might be able to use to order or get a hold of you or
sure
to be able to try it themselves.
Yeah. So the address is just www.drinkbronsons.com. And that's DrinkBronsons, drinkbronsons.com. That has information about both of the products, a little bit of information about the company, very minimal website. But for anyone that's interested in ordering bottles, you can go straight to drinkbronsons.com, put bottles into a cart, put in your shipping information, and it'll ship to you straight from our website. My contact, for anyone that has any questions, the email on the site is just bronson@drinkbronsons. That's me. So any emails that come into the website go directly to me. So that's how you contact me directly. And I can answer any questions.
Fantastic. All right. And you have a Facebook page. Again, that's just Drink Bronsons, Facebook.com, Drink Bronsons.
Yep.
And you can go there.
And we're on Facebook and Instagram as well.
And Instagram also. So get over him and try it. I'm I'm excited. I'm want to try it. I really am.
Awesome.
It sounds like it's very good, and I'm definitely gonna get some and give it a try. So
perfect.
Bronson, thank
you. Well, you have to let me know what you think.
I will definitely do that. Before we leave, Kistler, is it the last name?
Kistler. It's K-I-S-T-L-E-R.
Yeah, Kistler. Okay. Yeah, that's wasn't sure. I tried to pronounce it before you came on. I wasn't sure if I pronounced it right. So, yeah, I did.
It's okay. You got pretty close.
Yeah. So, thank you for taking the time tonight to join us. And it sounds like a great product. I hope people out there will give it a try, and you don't have a comments page, do you? You need to make up a comments section on your website.
I should do that. Those are wise words.
Yeah, you don't have any at all. You know, I mean, it'd be nice to have, people's comments, good or bad. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah,
I do get a lot of emails from people that share their feedback and ask about, how they can get a hold of them. That now that we have shipping on the site, that's really helped that quite a bit. But people do email pretty frequently with their thoughts and questions, and so we do get some feedback through there. But we'll get something
comments
on the page.
Get yourself a comments section on there, so people can find out what other people think and all that too. And it sounds fascinating to me. Milk. I'm still milk.
Yeah, and I'm glad you. And just on that, I mean, I will stress that it does. The milk is just as a clarifying agent. These do not taste like milk at all. If you weren't told there was milk in it. I mean, you could be told there's milk that was used to make it, and it's still kind of hard to believe.
But even milk is a clarifying agent. I mean, eggs I can see, but milk. Which brings up something I was going to ask earlier now, and before I let you go, some people are allergic to milk and milk products. Will this affect them?
If you have a dairy allergy, I would say tread lightly or maybe abstain. if it's a lactose intolerance, aside like the dairy allergy to is typically to the casein proteins.
Right.
The lactose intolerance is to those lactose sugar. The casein proteins are pretty much completely removed in the process.
Okay.
but for someone with a severe allergy, it's not. We haven't gotten the testing done on that. The lactose, it's about 1/32nd the amount of lactose that is in punch versus a glass of milk. So it's very, very small. I have had many, many friends and acquaintances try it with varying degrees of lactose intolerance, some of them very severe, and nobody has had any problems.
Oh, good.
Good. Okay. So it's such a small amount that it really has not presented any issues. But for the casein allergy, for the dairy allergy people, I would say pursue a taste at your own discretion.
There you go. I just dawned on me because I mentioned egg, and some wines are filtered with egg whites.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And then it dawned on me that some people complain about that and are allergic to it. So I just wanted to ask about the milk. Thank you, Bronson. It was interesting and enjoyable, and I will look forward to trying some myself.
Perfect. I'm looking forward to hearing what you think.
Okay, I will. I'll let you know. And thank you, and have a good evening now. Thanks.
All right. You too, Ron. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
There you go.
That was, you know, that's not... You know, that's not wine, but it's an interesting process. I mean, and he's using some bourbon spirits in there and stuff like that. And brandy, I think, is said on one of the things there. So, but that's interesting. I'm going to have to circumvent his shipping costs, and I'm have my sister go out and buy a bottle and ship it down to me because it'll be cheaper for her to ship it. But,
time on this roller, I had Brian Kistler on it, and I was like, who the heck is Brian? Who put that up there? And I looked at my editor, and I'm like, that's me. Apologies, a little late in the game here, but for the whole show, I had Brian Kistler, and I'm staring at another screen that says Bronson on it, and I'm like, how did I put Brian up? I put the name on the board and said Bronson. I'm like, who put Brian up there? I don't know what I was thinking, but
I didn't even see it. I went to his website. You know.
I'm watching for the, you know, how far the delay is and all that kind of stuff, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, something doesn't look right. That's not his name. I went to your email. I went to the description. I went to the post that, you know, goes to Facebook and Twitter. I go, I got it right there. It's just a little scroll thing. I had the wrong name. That's stupid. Anyway.
I didn't notice it. I'm the one that should. I didn't notice it. So, quick announcement. Sunday at 2:00 Sunday. In the morning, set your alarm so you can get up and set the clock back 1 hour. It is daylight saving time ends Sunday at 2:00. So. Again, set your alarm, get up, set your clocks back, and then go back to bed. You get an extra hour
today.
What's that?
Yeah, and the meteorologist, they were talking about the next 3 days, our sunset's going to be at, you know, 6:40, 6:50, somewhere around there. They said, but Sunday, starting Sunday, it's going to be 5:42 is the sunset. Yeah. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's early. It's going to be dark early. Yeah. But even now, though, I got up at 6:30 this morning. I had an appointment on Tampa, and I got up at 6:30. It was dark at 6:30. I mean, it was still dark. And come next week, it'll be light at 6:30 in the morning. So.
Yeah, I usually go to work at 7 a.m. And it's like nighttime.
It's strange. So. And you know, the old argument is the kids catching the buses at that time. You know, it's pitch black out there on some of these bus stops in the morning. But I see kids walking home and getting home from school at a little after 5 mm-hmm. now, and it's going to be pitch dark then. I mean, you know, one end or the other, you know, it's going to hit them. But yeah, Sunday daylight saving time ends. They keep talking about making it year round, and you know, I would say do it or just shut up. I mean, it's if you're going to do it year round, you know, let's do it year round. And then if you're not, then shut up and quit talking about doing it year round, because it's getting old every year.
Mm-hmm.
And well, twice a year during the changes, we hear this. So.
Yep.
It's time to
put a
cap on it, you know, just end this.
Mm-hmm.
So
there you go.
A cap.
We mentioned cap in the show.
Yeah. Speaking of cap, we had a cigar show, year and a half ago, I guess it's been now. And the guys mm-hmm. that were on the cigar show saying, Ron, when are you going to have us back on so we can start talking about cigars again? And I said, soon. They go, when? I said, well, I was going to do them in November, but I think I've got guests over the next couple of weeks. And then Thanksgiving comes up. So December, we are going to have a cigar show.
Hmm.
And we're going to have the guys back on, and we're going to talk about cigars and cover some topics we've already covered and some new ones. And mention their blogs, and if you're not following them, their blogs coming up and all that. So that's something to look forward to in December. It'll be Cap and Craig and Phil and Mike, and we got a new guy that's just, you know, not you, Mike, another Mike. And we got a new guy that's joined us who is I don't know if he's a cigar smoker or not. I think maybe he is, but he may be able to get on the show with us too. Alex, I believe his name is. So we got that coming up in December. We got an author coming up who sent me a book called The Wine List. Very interesting. Speaking of books, our guest last week, help me out here. No, 2 weeks ago. I'm sorry, not last week. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
About the Australian book.
Jonathan
How
Ross.
To Drink. Yeah, Jonathan, here it is. How to Drink Australian, an Essential Modern Wine Book. They shared a downloadable copy of the book with me. And interesting. I mean, really, I started reading a lot of pictures and about the different regions, and a very interesting book. I highly recommend, if you haven't done so and you're interested at all in Australian wines, then go on wherever you want to get it done and order it. You can order it directly through Jonathan and his partner Jane, and so you know, have them sign it for you, all that. But it's I've been reading through the book. I've got like 3 books I'm reading right now, which is not a good idea, because I don't dedicate any time to any one of them. I'm always jumping around reading them. But it's really a good book. Australian wines, and a lot about Australian wines and regions and all that stuff. So when he was on last, or 2 weeks ago, we didn't get a chance to cover as much about the book as he wanted to, but it is well worth it. So check it out, How to Drink Australian, an Essential Modern Wine Book. And it was just released in September, 1st of September, so it is new. So I wanted to bring that up too.
Okay. Well, that's good. Next one is, if we don't have any other announcements, our next show is coming up on November the 9th, which is next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you mark your calendars and your clocks and everything. I have an alarm that goes off at 6:30, so I'll get up if I'm dozed or whatever.
Yeah.
But 30, it's a little reminder. You need to do the show just in case. Do the same. I highly recommend it, and join us at 7 p.m. Eastern time, or in the archives, it's fine. But whatever you can do, we appreciate it. So that's the next show, and don't forget, it is replayed on Saturdays. So in case you do miss it live, you can listen to us on Saturdays on the other. What's the? Did I lose it? What are we on?
You forgot the name of your show.
Flightline Radio. There you go. Oh my God, it's like one of these screens in here, but like I need to. But join us there.
Flightline Radio. He's starting to put some stuff. He's got All About Wine on there. He's got the First and 15th, mm-hmm. which is very funny. What do you want to call it? Podcast.
Yeah, it's a podcast, different topics, and it's kind of a free flow type of thing. It just goes right into the next one, and you know, it doesn't seem like it's planned or anything. It's just off the cuff, and it's very common.
It's hilarious.
Played in the morning. They do a good job on that. So
they do.
It's Cap and Phil do that, First and 15th. And that's we do it Wednesdays, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. So tune in, Eastern time. Yeah.
Mike is live. When are you live now? What have you changed your times, or what are you doing?
Yes, I had to. I was just, yes. I sleep in now on Saturday. And that now I'm on from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., which also gives me a opportunity to announce All About Wine coming up at 12. So you catch me live 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., and then All About Wine takes over, and the show is like today's show will be coming up this Saturday after my live show on the station. So, yes, something to that effect.
Flightline Radio.
It's 7 a.m. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I can listen to you now. You're in
a little more
human hours. I can actually listen to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. All right. With that, we'll talk to you all next Thursday. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great weekend and a great week. And thanks to our guest. For more information, go to drinkbronsons.com. drinkbronsons.com. Check it out. Thank you.
And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
All About Wine.
All right, there you go. And we're off.
Great.